Mr. Regal, in this interview, I'd like to have you discuss your recollections on the beer brewing business in the Saginaw Valley. I'd like to start out with your early recollections of beer in general during your early years, your childhood and teens, and work on from there. I guess I'd like to start out by asking you how popular beer was as a drink when you were a child, your earliest recollections.
Well, when I was a child, my earliest recollections is that the bottled beer was never delivered into a tavern. They just had beer on tap. And then, and then the saloons, the women were not allowed to go into them to drink. But most of the saloons in this district had a back room. And when the farmers came to town to shop, they'd drive up there, and the man would go in the front door, and the lady would go around the side door. And at that time, they served free lunches. So he would go in the front door and look and see what was there for to eat, and he'd go in and tell her there's cheese or bologna or whatever she wanted. She'd tell him what he wanted. He'd go back into the bar and get what she wanted and carry it into this little room with a big shooper of beer.
And would they both eat there together, or?
No, no. He'd stand out at the bar and eat. She'd be alone in the back room. And when they finished, she'd walk out and never enter the front door, you know. She'd walk around the side of the building, get out of the wagon, and he'd go out the front door.
Well, that has changed today.
Well, I should say that.
Wonder what women's liberation groups would think of that.
I don't know.
Was beer more popular than hard liquor, whiskey?
Well,
They
sold very little hard liquor or whiskey, mostly beer. And it was just some of the, certain class of people went in there, and once in a while they'd take a glass of whiskey, but very seldom, mostly beer. And the liquor didn't come in bottles, it came in barrels. They'd draw it out of the barrel from a spigot.
And then what you're saying is that it was the common man that drank the beer, and maybe the richer
that's
folks,
right.
And
yeah, that's true.
Let's say travelers from the big cities,
or some of the businessmen, they drink liquor.
Oh, okay. But most popular drink in this area was
at that time was beer.
Yes.
Oh yes.
Okay. I imagine it still is.
Well, yes, I think it is, especially in this section, I know that.
At least by volume.
Yes. Of course, you go to the east side where these popular bowling alleys and everything, where they sell more liquor.
Yeah. I guess I'd like to get into breweries, even before you were in business here. What breweries were there in this area, the Saginaw River system?
Well, locally, that is right in Bay City, we had the Phoenix and the Calm and the Finest. And in Saginaw, they had the National Brewery and the Banner Brewing Company. And in Flint, they had a White Seal. Those are the breweries that I know of around here. And then, of course, Sibwing.
Knowing that there is one big brewery today in Frankenmuth, how many were there then?
There were two.
Two?
There was the Geyer Brewing Company and the, at that time it was called Frankenmuth Brewing Company.
And that is today?
Geyer's is still there. And now the big brewery has changed from Frankenmuth to Carling's.
And that's just one of the plants in the Carling chain.
Yeah.
Is that still controlled by the family that originally...
The Geyer?
No, the Carling. Is there still part of the family that was in there
with
Frankenmuth?
Oh, no, that's a completely different concern.
Okay. Well, how about your personal experience in the brewing business, the Phoenix Brewery?
Well, of course, you know, the country had prohibition, all the breweries were closed. And then Mr. Burns, he took this Phoenix Brewery, and when they started there, they only had a 50-barrel brewing kettle and 1,500 barrels for storage. And of course, that was small, but when he started at it, we operated and didn't produce very much, but we rebuilt the whole brewery. And we got up to a capacity, a storage capacity of 4,000 barrels. And we had a brew kettle of 175 barrels.
You said you, Mr. Behrens bought the brewery during Prohibition.
Yes.
What did he do with it while Prohibition was still on?
Well, while Prohibition was on, they used to make a what they called a malt extract in 5-gallon cans. And they used it for home brew, which was legal at that time during Prohibition.
Then when Prohibition ended, you started...
It really wasn't legal, but they had people bought it and made it for their own consumption. Nobody would bother them. Of course, if they sold them, they were sold it, they were in trouble.
Then after Prohibition ended, the Phoenix Brewery started operation again.
In 1933.
And did you revamp the place, put new equipment in before Prohibition ended, or as soon as it did?
As soon as it did. That's why we operated with that small kettle and brew kettle and the small storage when we were making the malt extract. But then later on, as I told you, we developed the whole plant, had new bottling machinery and new storage tanks, new brew kettle, everything was new.
Your bottling process, how was that done before the new equipment? Well, how did that change?
At first, we just had draft beer. And then when we bottled beer, we didn't bottle very much of it, but that was all done with a hand filler and hand capper and old wooden pasteurizer. But with the new equipment, well, we could bottle probably about 10 barrels a day, 10, 12 barrels a day when you were hand bottling. But in the new process, we had big tanks, put a bottling shop over here, and 100 barrel tanks. We used to bottle 100 barrels every day.
So your production of bottled beer increased.
Oh yes,
10 times.
Sure. We could bottle, let's see, from 13 to 1,350 cases a day.
Now about the process of brewing beer, can you give me a brief idea, such as the ingredients and the sources of those?
Yes, well, we had to have malt and hops and rice.
What is malt and where does it come from?
Well, malt comes from barley malt. And then the hops, the best hops that were grown in the United States was out in Oregon. And of course, we bought, in our beer, we always bought imported hops from Yugoslavia. But you don't use many hops in beer, you know. That's just a preservative and a flavor.
Do they still use a lot of that today, or?
Well, I don't. Of course, from my personal observation, and I try the different beers, there are very few of them that have a hop flavor today.
I remember maybe 6 years ago, I believe it was breweries that advertised the Drury hop. In fact, they were had an advertisement where they showed dancing, and they called it the hop.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll tell you, you want to realize this, that during the war, you were unable to get hops. But we happened to be fortunate because we built a big storage compartment there, and we had bales of it. In fact, I sent a bale of hops to a certain brewery, and he says, could you spare a bale of hops? I said, yes, I think so. He says, boy, I haven't had any hops and beer in 4 months. And we still had hops when the brewery closed.
Was being that there was a lack of hops during the...
You couldn't get it.
Did that hurt the preserving process, or was there some substitute at that time?
Well, they come out with what they call hoppos, but it was nothing like the real hops. We never used any of it, but some of the breweries did.
So I would say that your beer was of high quality.
Absolutely.
After Prohibition ended, and until the Phoenix Brewery closed, what would you say your production was per month or year? Over, let's say every 5 years, the increases.
Well,
how'd that go?
After we had our new equipment in there, our demand was so great that we couldn't. It was a steady output. See, you didn't do very, very much over a month. And another thing, you see, we didn't go outside of Bay City with our beer. We didn't have any distributors like the other breweries. We sold most of it here and a very little in Saginaw. Those were the two places we sold our beer.
And about what time did the local breweries or the breweries in the Saginaw area start folding?
Well, let's see now. White Seal was the first, and
White Seal was the one.
And oh yes, and National Brewery in Saginaw, and Banner Brewery, and then Cobbs, and then Finest, and we were the last one operating. See, Cobbs closed in 1938. And Finest closed in around 42, and we were the last ones in operation. We closed in 52. Is that right?
Then, could we talk something about the operating, the management of the brewery? You said that after the Depression, you were very busy, almost at constant output. But I remember in the past you said it depended on the demand at the time.
Yeah.
So what would you do if demand for beer fell off at some particular time? Were there layoffs?
No. No, we never. When we closed, we just simply shut the whole plant down.
What about during, between Prohibition and the time the plant closed? Were there ever slack periods where you had to lay men off of work for just a month?
Oh no, we never laid our men off. But like some of the other breweries would work maybe 2 days a week before they closed. And that's the amount of work the men got.
What about conditions for the employees? Working conditions, what were the hours? But what was the pay, and were there any benefits like there are today?
Well, no, they never had any benefits, but we always treated our men good. In fact, we were paying some of our men more than the union contract because they were good men. And then, of course, at Christmas time, Mr. Burns was a very liberal man, and we always had a big Christmas party, and he gave them big turkeys and government bond for Christmas, every Christmas.
Well, how many men worked for you at one time? What was the most?
28.
28. Mm-hmm. It seems like quite a few for that amount of beer.
Well, no. You see, during the process, you had to have three men that were working just in the washhouse and three in the cellars. And then you had your firemen. You see, you had three shifts of firemen, all 8-hour shifts.
That was for the brewing process to keep the
cattle going? Yeah, that was just in the brewery. And then your bottling shop, you had three on the... Well, I don't recall just how many ran, but I know we had 28 on the payroll. Of course, that included Mr. Barron's two sons and me, and he always took a salary too, you know, so... And I had two in the office with me.
Was the brewing business a profitable venture?
Well, I'll say it was. As long as we were gone, very good.
What would you say caused the folding of the Phoenix Brewery?
Competition by large breweries. You realize when in 1934 and 35, there were 758 breweries in the United States. Now there's less than 200. Not only these breweries around here, but Wisconsin, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, were great for small breweries, a lot of small breweries in those. And they all folded up. 19 closed in Wisconsin in 1 year. Well, that was before we closed.
Where were these big breweries located?
Well, for instance, Stroh in Michigan here, we had Stroh, Pfeiffer, Goble, and a lot of them are off the market now. Big breweries closed. And Altus is still in business, but they don't brew their beer in their own brewery anymore.
So these big breweries that actually put you out of business through competition.
That's right.
We're not in this area.
Well,
so would you say it was a change in transportation methods?
Oh no, their production was thousands and thousands of barrels, a million barrels for Stroh's a year. And advertising. And well, they could do a lot of things that we couldn't do because we couldn't afford it.
For instance?
Well, Stroh's would invite, well, not only Stroh's, but a lot of the big boys. They had people from all over the state going in there, and of course every brewery in the state would give you a beer, you know, but they'd also feed them and everything else. We couldn't afford to do that.
So it was guided tours at their plants.
That's right.
That attracted people.
Sure.
I imagine once they'd been in the plant, they would probably drink that beer so they could tell their friends, you know,
I went
through the plant where this brand of beer was.
And then they had their promotional men were going to every tavern in the state, you know.
But weren't you well enough established in this locality in order to keep enough customers for your particular brand?
No, you couldn't. Because, you were up against it right away with the competition.
Did price have anything to do with it? Could they produce and sell beer cheaper than you?
No.
So Big did not cut their cost any, or at least not sales cost.
Well, they had the money to put on big sales campaigns. Just like Ed McMahon today, you know, with the horses and everything. You know, that's a lot of money on television. What little brewery could do that? Anything like it? Wouldn't be in the books.
Then you would say that the cause of the decrease in demand for your brand of beer would be competition for the big brewers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Would you say advertising?
Well,
you know, advertise you to become popular in the area?
Yes, advertising. But you're speaking about this area. Why, many, many small breweries closed all over the country. The figure shows that we had the number of birds we had in 1934 and 35, 716, and less than 200 now proves it. The small breweries all went. And that was through the large brewery, you know, with the production they had, the advertising they had, and so on. So that's what happened.
And these small breweries just did not have the capital to invest in advertising.
That's right. So that's about it.
And being that they were moving into your area, being you had such a small area that you serve, your demand in this area was decreasing.
Reduced,
and
sure.
You could not invest in money to spread out,
that's
to
right.
Distribute.
Didn't have the money. Didn't have the production, that's true.
So, well, how has the outlook on beer changed? I've been out to nightclubs and it seems as though maybe only one quarter of the customers drink beer in excess. It's mostly mixed drinks now.
Well,
when did that come about?
Well, when beer first came back, they hadn't had it in a long while, and people went for beer. Later on, more and more toward whiskey. And today, well, a lot of people go into a bar, you're in there, and a lot of them are having mixed drink, taking a shot of whiskey in place of beer.
You think maybe the upturn in the economy would have a lot to do with it?
Might be, but even before Prohibition, you had some fellows that, when they couldn't get good liquor, they'd drink bootleg whiskey, you know. A lot of it was brought in, a lot of whiskey was brought in from Canada, too.
Then?
The young people today are drinking more mixed drink, you know that?
Do you think it's maybe to, like the idea of keeping up with the Joneses?
Might be, I don't know. I noticed that.
More or less showing off. I think beer is more of a in-the-home drink, wouldn't you say? They drink it in the home, but when they go out socializing, nightclubs and parties, that's where they...
Years ago, we had a lot of picnics. You know, the different churches gave big picnics. You never saw any liquor there, just beer. And they liked it. And I think beer is a more of a social drink than whiskey. Because some fellows get wild with drinking whiskey. You know that happens.
But with the increase in swankier nightclubs.
That's right.
When you go into a ritzy place, you don't want to order a beer. It looks cheap. You know, you want to be a
right.
part
they wanna,
of the surroundings.
Go along with the crowd, sure.
So, between, let's say, the prosperity that we were enjoying and the people becoming more lavish,
that's right,
going out more to nightclubs, plus the fact that big breweries could advertise and could compete better, had the funds to compete.
Now, since the drinking age has been lowered to 18 years old, you don't know what's going to happen. You know.
Yes.
You've got so many more people that can drink alcoholic beverages. So many people.
Well, I think that beer might have an upturn again. Because I've been to a few establishments and the young people, they don't have the funds to spend mixed drinks.
That's
and if there's live entertainment, the prices are quite high.
Well, you've got something there that might work out, might do.
So what little money they have to spend on... So it was the middlemen that were making quite a bit of profit also.
That's right. It wasn't the breweries, because the federal government, they checked you very closely. That was what you could do, no more.
What about government regulation in the brewery business?
Various.
What kind of taxes were there? What kind of inspections?
Oh, they come every 30 days they were here. And they'd go all through the brewery.
What would they be looking for?
Well, they'd be taken in. So you were not producing beer that wasn't, the tax wasn't paid on it. They'd inventory your malt, your hops, everything. And to go through and test the beer, amount of beer in the tanks, the metal tanks, and they'd pound on them, and they would know. But then you had to have gauges on there that shows you how much beer was in there. They'd check them all. And they'd come up and see what I had recorded on my books and checked all right for you were all clear.
And what about the taxing process? How did they do that?
Well, you had to buy stamps. Now, they had a half barrel stamp for half barrels, a quarter barrel stamp for eighth barrels. They used to sell a lot of eighth barrels then. But your bottle beer, that was all paid in, because we pumped 100 barrels over there. So you'd have 20 barrel, 10 barrel, 5 barrel, and 1 barrel stamps for paying the tax on that. Like if you had, if you pumped over 85 or 90 barrels, you had the stamps to do it with, and you had to go over and get them at the federal government.
So even
before you ever pumped the beer over there, don't forget that.
You had to buy them in advance.
You had to buy them in advance. So you always carried extra ones in case they pumped a barrel or two too much, well, you'd have it covered. Oh yeah, they were very strict.
What about sanitary inspections? Did they check your equipment out
Absolutely. So did the state of Michigan. We had two inspecting the breweries, the state and the federal.
Is there any stories that you could tell, short ones, that you think are of particular interest to a listener that might stimulate an interest?
I'll tell you, the men that worked for us, I have to say that they were all treated very well. And they could, if they were given a party or anything, well, the brewery always furnished the beer. And they'd go out to Sibley and have a baseball game. We went to Sibley and they furnished the beer. When they come here, we furnished the beer. And they really had fun in the brewery because, for instance, Feeney's played the Cadillac Garage. And they bet five cases of beer against an old Cadillac didn't run. But they brought it over here and we won it. And they were standing out here and we had a man that used to come and get malt from us over here, and he had a horse, an old gray horse, and he had it out in front of the bottle shop, and they decorated that horse's ears with the ribbons and everything in the harness, and they hooked it down to that old, they were having a baseball game over here that night, they hauled it over to Cold Field, that old car, and a lot of the guys were sitting down there, but the horse couldn't pull it, so the fellows get on and shove it behind. And on the side of that car, they said, "We won, 3-1." Well, those are things they
that was a ball game.
Oh, yes.
Between the Phoenix employees and...
And the Sibley. No, that was between the Cadillac and the Sibley. Yeah, no, that was the Cadillac and the Phoenix, rather.
And it was at Sibley.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sebring, I don't think you mentioned when that closed, because my father has a full bottle of Sebring beer in the basement.
Yeah.
When did they close up?
That I don't know, because...
Was it after Phoenix?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, that changed hands under different management, and some outside concern bought it, and they furnished a lot of beer to some of the stores. And so, unless you went out there and got it, and it was... buy a few cases at a time, but none was sold around here. And they didn't last long doing that. They closed. We were great friends of the original Phoenix, Sibley Brewery. That's how we got together. And all their employees, they were great friends of ours, every one of them. They come from a little town like Bay City. And
so actually, the competition between the small local breweries was a friendly one.
That was all right.
There was plenty of customers for
everyone.
That's
right. They were, when we first operating Culp's and Finest and Phoenix, they all got along together. I knew the Culp's for years, you know.
So actually, the introduction of real competition by the big breweries was something new to the small
breweries. We never had any competition against the local breweries.
Among you?
No. They all got along. In fact, if they ran out of label glue or something like that, they'd call me up and say, how about, come on over and help them out. That happened to Finest too, you know. They run out of anything, we'd help them out.
Just as an interesting point, I remember before you talked about the using of yeast, which is a byproduct of brewing?
Well, sure.
For medicinal purposes?
Oh, yes.
Could you briefly give me...
See, you have to... When your brew kettle is empty, that's merely malt extract. And then you pump it up. That was on the upper floor. You put it in these tanks. But you add the yeast. And that yeast used to multiply. My golly, you put a couple of pails of yeast in there and you get a half barrel out of it. And then one doctor in particular that I know, he recommended yeast to people. We used to give away 50, no other brewery gave yeast away, but Phoenix did. And we used to fill 50 quart jars every week and give it to the people around here. And some people, they wouldn't be without it, but now they can't get it anymore.
So I see that they sell brewer's yeast.
That's dry yeast.
That's dry. You don't think it's as good.
Listen, when I was a small fellow, in the drugstores they sold a bottle of maltine, what they called maltine, as a tonic. That's what they sold. Maltine.
What was it used for?
Well, a tonic. You know, something like Geritol or something like that.
Is there anything for maybe skin?
Absolutely. I guess so. Well, my wife, here we're in the brewery business, and we went out, I took her out to the doctor, and he says, you got the best thing right in your brewery. For you, what's that? Brewer's yeast. And that's what we took.
And it would not be available in the non-dried form?
No, the dry, when your yeast comes out of there, and it's dried. You know, they used to get a lot of this yeast from the breweries, Fleischmann's and that, you know. But your maltine is gone out of there. That's just the yeast. You know, a lot of people go out and they pick this wild stuff, you know, and use it for fermenting beer. It wasn't sterilized or anything, just, you know, they used to use that.
Well, I guess that concludes the interview, unless there is anything that you would like to add.
No, I...
You're welcome to.
Well, I can't add anything. All I can say is that the years that I spent in the brewery were good years, and I personally am not a strong drinker, but I associated with a lot of people that did drink, and we sold most of the picnics around here, and that was fun to go out to them. You'd see all these people, they had tables there, and you'd see these old farmers sitting there. And they were never thinking of any liquor or anything. All they wanted was a good cold glass of beer, and they had a band there, and every time the band finished playing, they'd go and get another beer. that was really fun.
And you and your father-in-law used to make personal deliveries to the picnics?
No, Dick Brownfield was our distributor in Bay City. He delivered all the beer. We didn't deliver any beer.
But did you make little visits there?
Oh, yes, sure.
To associate with the people?
Oh, yes.
And that's competition, too, but in held form.
I had to take...
Mixing with your customers.
Well, at a picnic, that's a different thing, because they were not... They're not selling their beer to for one day. They didn't have that open... They could get a license, you see. They had to have a license. But it was a one-day license only. They didn't have to, when they gave them two or three picnics, they couldn't buy a license for two or three picnics. They'd had to be applied for, and then they'd investigate and for what purpose it was for and everything. If it was for churches or anything like that, well, that was all right. One day license. That's all. Then they had, they used to have games for the kids there, you know, and everything. Give them prizes. And they had a shooting array there. That's what you'd like.
I wonder, the way society is changing today, you talked a little bit about your employees, and you said that you treated them well. I assume from that that you never had any troubles with them as far as absenteeism or...
No. And another thing, the way Mr. Burns was, if someone came and they said, gee, they had a toothache, they want to lay off, they were never docked. They could go and stay at half a day or anything they want. They were never docked. They always got their pay. Make any difference. We had a fellow that had a sick spell. He was gone for 2 days. And when he came back, when I made the payroll Friday, he got his regular pay. Never any docking. But the boys did favors for us, too, occasionally, you know.
And that is what is really missing from
one hand
today's.
Washed the other. That's
yes.
Right.
What about the introduction of the union? You mentioned that when you were discussing pay. You paid more in a union contract.
Well, you know, the small breweries around this locality, they didn't pay the wages that they did in Stroh. They had a different contract. They had a special contract. And Sibley, Finest, and Phoenix, Bay City Brewery. But a man came here, and old man Stroh, he's dead now, but he told him, if you're going up there to unionize those breweries, you go and see old Hans Behrens. He's the best one of them to see first. So he came to Dad. And he talked there, and he had the contract there, and I read it over, and I said, Dad, you can sign that. All right. Now, I made the payroll. So when next Friday came, I said, now, Dad, what should I do with this payroll? Should I pay what the union wants, or should I? He says, you keep right on the way you were going.
Which was actually
more
than what the union contract
asked
right. for.
The only fellows that we had to raise under the contract was the three night watchmen, firemen. You know.
In other words, they had to receive a premium.
They received, let's see, what was that?
A percentage?
I think it was 6 cents more an hour.
And what was about the base wage?
Well, of course, wages were low all over at that time.
You know? Yes, we realize that.
And our summer man, he got $5 more than the union scale. And Eddie Woods and Mickey Bredeke got $3 more. And what else? Oh, the washhouse crew. They all got $2 more, because the washhouse crew, it wasn't technical work. Like Mickey Bredeke, he was assistant cellar man. Well, he was more, we had to use him more than we did a fellow that washes kegs and that, you know.
Well, how much per week did they make?
Well, when we were first starting, there was bad times, you know, in 1932 and 33. We started the fellows at work that is equipping the brewery, $18 a week. It sounds like nothing, but $18 a week was considered fair. Then, when we got to making beer, then we kept some of them that worked and helped the brewery that were handymen, so we kept them and gave them a job in the brewery. And they got $28 a week. After we produced beer, they got a raise of $10 a week. And it kept on that way until the brewery closed. But, you know, it isn't actually what they were working for, but, of course, just like old John Stroh says, Mr. Burns, the East one, they had trouble with organizing finest clubs, you know. And with our men, if they'd say, come up and, Mr. Perrins, I'm going to have some company. Not they couldn't do it right long, but they'd come once in a while. God, I got my cousin coming from here or there. And the brewery wasn't supposed to sell any case beer to privates. And you think I can have a case of beer? You tell Jimmy Bodecki, who's our bottle shop for him, you tell Jimmy to mark it down in my name on their HH on a case of beer. And how'd it go? We'd had to have everybody that took a case of beer out of there because the government come and counted the number of cases you had, see. He'd just say, put HH on there and give them a case of beer. And he did that to a lot of them. They didn't take advantage of it either. No.
Well, Mr. Eagle, I'd like to thank you for this interview. And I'm sure that it'll stimulate other people's interests. And if it's all right with you, maybe they'd like to discuss it further if you have spare time.
Oh, well, I think I've given you all the information I know, and I'm glad you came over.
Okay. And I'll be seeing you quite often.
No, I didn't. How would you like a glass of beer now?
That sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.